Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Season 4 of Typecast, Boston's new play podcast. I'm Darren Evans, the Managing Director of Boston Playwrights Theatre, the home for new plays in Boston. We're back today on Typecast to hear from two playwrights kicking off our Spring Rep Festival here at BPT. We are joined by third-year playwriting MFA candidates at BU, Isabel Ferishta Sanatdar-Stevens and Brandon Zhang. Isabel and Brandon are the playwrights of our two new works this spring, The Fig Tree and The Phoenix and The Desire to be Reborn, and The Recursion of a Moth, respectively. Isabel is a queer Iranian and Irish-American playwright. Her plays focus on love and loss, desperate attempts to make new worlds and realities, and bearing witness to the anger and grief of folks often ignored or overlooked. Her work has been supported by Smith College, Horizon Theater Company, New Repertory Theater, the Kennedy Center, and of course, Boston Playwrights Theater. Isabel also serves as the New York Stage and Film's Associate Artistic Director. Brandon is a writer of science fiction and fantasy plays, using world-building to distance, deconstruct, and dissect the complex issues of today. Born in Tianjin, China, Brandon moved with his family to Canada when he was 6 years old. He found his passion for playwriting while studying at the University of Chicago. Inspired by the works of Octavia E. Butler, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Ken Liu, he strives to center queer and BIPOC stories in science fiction. His plays have been presented at Lifeline Theater, Shuang Stage, the Road Theater Company, Live Arts, and again, of course, Boston Playwrights Theater. Welcome, Isabel and Brandon.
Hi, Darren.
Hi, Darren. Thanks for having us.
All right, so to start off, could you both give us a 2 or 3 sentence description of the plays that you have in this spring rep at BPT so we have some context for this upcoming discussion?
The Fig Tree and the Phoenix and the Desire to be Reborn is a two-hander that follows two Zoroastrian deities who are reincarnated as children during the Iran-Iraq War. And in an attempt to make sense of their grief and the world they're surviving in, they kind of create their own version of what the world should be, finding healing and love and joy as they can.
My play is called The Recursion of a Moth. It's a classic science fiction time travel story. The main character's name is Icarus, and we find out that he's a time traveling bureaucrat who's on paid time off. And his longtime ex comes and tries to get him to help on a case. And I won't say any more, because if I say any more, it's going to be a spoiler.
But yeah, no spoiler. We have a strong no spoiler policy here.
Yes, but it is a homage to classic time travel stories, classic science fiction stories, the ones that I grew up with and are greatly inspired by.
All right, so these shows are either currently in tech or just finished tech. So I want to go behind the scenes with the new play process. So how involved are you in the process as a playwright? And I know you've both made a lot of rewrites in the past couple of weeks. How does that work in practice? You're in the rehearsal room, you're rewriting. Just how does it work?
Yeah, it's. I have been struggling with this play for a long time. So tons of rewrites. Darren's absolutely right about that. I am very blessed to have an amazing director and amazing team of actors who are so graceful whenever I bring in new pages to try. So yeah, I've been doing tons of rewrites, making tons of discoveries in the rehearsal room with my team. And I actually just wrapped up tech yesterday. So during tech, we were able to really finalize the draft that we're going to present at performances. There's still a little bit of tiny cutting to do with certain scenes, but overall, it's really just a process of being open to changes, being open to discoveries, being spontaneous. Again, I had a great team who were very willing to be flexible with me as a writer who's still discovering what this play wants to be.
Great. So you were making rewrites really up until the last minute, Brandon. What was the biggest revelation about your play that you discovered during the rehearsal process?
Wow, that's a hard question. The biggest revelation that I made quite recently, actually, just seeing the tech run, is actually that this play is not quite a melodrama. I think this play is very, very contained, and it has a sort of tonal strangeness to it that I really love, which I think is just going to be really interesting in a theatrical format. One of the biggest struggles I had with this play is adapting a story that is more familiarly seen in a literary form. And for so long, the play felt too big. It was too big to fit into an hour and a half. It was too big to fit on a stage with only three characters. But recently, I really discovered that there's so much to be left to the imagination. So I'm using that as much as possible as a device. And that was a discovery I made completely in the rehearsal room during tech, actually, by seeing the design elements, by seeing the staging that my team has created.
I think for me, the biggest revelation came actually during the pre-pro period. So even before rehearsals started, storytelling is really integral to my play. And who is the storyteller, and how do we tell our own stories? How do we make believe our own realities? And my director is amazing. Her name's Nikta. She's the best. We're very good friends. And she was like, yeah, so like, it's like Par de Jone. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, it is. And that kind of informed not only the set, which, you know, drew from traditional Iranian storytelling traditions, but also in the way the actors kind of approached the work once they got into the room. And Nikta really worked with them to be like, this is our history. Here's how we can respect and represent it in this way while honoring Feresh Day's vision. So that was cool.
That actually leads me right into my next question, this talking about how you tell your own stories. These plays both are heavily influenced by identity, whether that's cultural identity, sexual orientation, place in the world. And I'm interested in how do your various identities influence your writing and the play creation process? Is it something that you're thinking about when you're writing, or is it just something that comes out when because you're writing it?
I think for me, my cohort mates have described me as like having plays that are bleeding hearts. So it's a little bit hard to separate myself from my writing, and it just kind of flows out in that way. So the process of like rewrites and edits is a little bit more about like not containing it, but making it a little bit more translatable to a larger audience instead of just this is Isabel, this is Feresh Day, but like, how does it become the story? So there's always that kernel of, you know, I'm the one writing it. So it's kind of coming from that place into something bigger.
I absolutely agree. I think it just comes from within us. You know, I think all plays are actually deeply rooted in identity, no matter what subject you're writing about, right? I think some of the most classic plays that are sort of just about the human condition are actually deeply rooted in that playwright's time and place and situation and identity. And it's something that we've talked about a lot, because I think my play, The Recursion of a Moth, tends to be, this is probably the least identity forward play that I've written. But I do think, you know, as an Asian person, as a queer person, those are identities and facts about me that cannot be removed in any work that I write, just because I wrote it, right? So we've had this conversation too before, like, is this an Asian play, right? It's a play with Asian actors. It's a story that features certain elements that could potentially be Asian, but they never quite name that identity. But to me, because again, I wrote it, the inherent place in which the play comes from is deeply influenced by my lived experience and my cultural experiences. So to me, even though I want the audience to take whatever they can from any work that I do, to me, this play is deeply Asian and deeply embedded within the identities that I hold.
All right. Well, both of these plays, which, by the way, are wildly different in their sort of tone and scope, but they have themes of creating new worlds or timelines to remedy problems or challenges within the world of the play. And I'm just wondering, is when you were writing, is that a response to current political and social issues? Were you not at all considering the present moment when writing these?
I actually think our plays are very similar.
Okay.
They are very different in premise and different in genre. And partly this is because Isabel and I are very good friends. So a lot of our conversations bleed and influence each other. But I think deep at its core, there is something cyclical about these two plays. There's something deeply melancholic, but also deeply hopeful about these plays. In response to the current moment, I would say this play is a manifestation of a very current me. all the anxieties I hold. I think this play actually started as a very, very personal story about my family and people I knew, but I actually had to really distance myself in a couple of rewrites just because it felt too close to me. So the story has really evolved past, I guess, the more current, real living situation that I was encountering at that time. However, that's where it came from, and that's why the play feels so deeply relevant and deeply alive to me, even though it takes on this form of a, you know, sort of a wild time travel futuristic aesthetic.
Yeah, absolutely. Echoing Brandon, I think, you know, there's a lot of personal in these two plays, and both of us are very empathetic people to a degree. So for me specifically, I'm Middle Eastern American, and just everything happening right now in the Middle East and Palestine specifically is always on my mind. So when I was approaching how to write this play, I was like, okay, how do I bring the Iranian history into the present moment? And, you know, things are happening in Iran. It's not like nothing's, it's not like everything is perfect, you know? Zan Zendegi Azadi, woman like freedom, is still going. It's just, is the Western world watching and talking about it. And so when I was writing this play and even thinking about like events and things like that, you know, at the forefront of all of my work is the Free Palestine movement. So I don't know, like, it's kind of like, how can you not write about what you're thinking about? And it's all that's been on my mind, and children and adults and men and women, regardless of age, are being murdered in a genocide. So just trying to kind of like create a space for people going through all of this while inviting people in who might not. I mean, like, I don't know how anyone's not aware, but maybe a better term is like, it's not at the forefront of their minds because they're not directly impacted. With this play, I was trying to kind of invite those people in so that, you know, they could kind of realize that Palestinians are human. And their life is sacred, and that people should be concerned and doing what they can. So that's kind of where political current happenings are coming into my play that are about two children surviving through war and the trauma that like is inescapable when that's your reality.
Would you say then that you feel an obligation in your writing when presenting something to the public that you feel like you need to address these important issues? Or
yeah, 100%. I think, like, you know, everyone has a responsibility to be like a global citizen and socially conscious. And if I'm going to do something, I'm going to center voices that need to be upheld and amplified in a way that, like, taking the power I have, which I acknowledge is limited power, you know, but I'm gonna always use that to kind of amplify voices that maybe aren't getting the same amplification in the current political climate. There's like an article in the Dramatists Guild newspaper or the magazine they just released that's like, it's still taboo, Palestinian American playwrights and like stories on stages. And people just aren't producing it. People aren't supporting it because of social pressure to not be anti-Semitic. But it's not inherently anti-Semitic to be Palestinian and share your truth. And I think people are using that as a scapegoat a bit. So I'm trying to use every opportunity I have to just center realities for people who are going through this.
And what I love about your play is that it really centers the humanity of
yeah.
these characters, the universal humanity that any person with emotions
right.
Should be and can relate to.
And that's the thing. I think pain is universal and these circumstances are not. You know, not everyone has gone through this. Not everyone will go through this. So how do we make space and support the people who are going through it and have gone through it in a way that is proactive and not belittling or putting to the side for other people's comfort is kind of my goal.
Brandon, science fiction in general has a long tradition of using that genre and setting of future worlds or distant worlds to, of course, comment directly on the present situation. And I'm just interested if that's one of the reasons that you're drawn to sci-fi writing. Is that something that you think about when you're writing in that genre?
Absolutely. I think I fell in love with science fiction when I was young because of the escapism aspect to it. I really like the idea of world building and inhabiting sort of these very inventive, very different worlds. But actually, it was the political works, I think, that really activated my writer brain, right? I think when I was young, I read a lot of books that were deeply metaphorical, that were deeply, like you said, reflective of the current situation, of the politics, of the socio-political realities of the real world in the current time. And what I love about science fiction is that it completely removes the context that we're so familiar with, right? It doesn't set it in the real world. And I think what is powerful about that is sort of this Brechtian alienation effect that we get, in which we are able to see things, you know, more or less a little bit more objectively when we are able to remove ourselves, when we're able to remove that subjectivity from very complicated and very nuanced situations. I think this work absolutely does that. I think even when I first created it, I really wanted to set in this strange bureaucratic world, right? One of the themes that is a big undercurrent throughout the story is that these people are bureaucrats, like given one of the most powerful things that a human could have is to travel through time and potentially affect the events of history and the future. But all of it has been reduced to bureaucracy and sort of the numbness and, you know, nihilism or fatalism that these characters feel when they're stuck in that situation. And it creates this very, again, very alien, very strange world because it can combine something as futuristic and as wild as time travel, and then it combines with something so familiar, which we all know is, you know, a corporate desk job. So that something about that, those extremes of the polarity of those extremes and the distancing and the strange effect that it eventually creates on stage is something I'm interested in.
Amazing. Thank you both. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear from this episode's sponsor. But when we come back, we will hear more from Brandon and Isabel, and they will face off in a writing game battle. Stay tuned. Most of us have that one ex we just can't stay away from. The one whose Instagram we just want to take a peek at, you know, just to see what they're up to. The one whose Spotify listener activity still haunts the right panel of our desktop. The one whose grandma is still our friend on Facebook. And wow, don't they look really good at their family reunion in Costa Rica? No! Bad! Introducing the Destalker, the brand new miniature spray bottle to condition you to stop stalking your ex on social media. Gone are the late nights of scrolling and dreaming of what could have been, the trips you could have taken together, the times you could have dressed up as Hot Priest and Fleabag for Halloween. No! Bad! Simply attach the Destalker to your electronic devices and, like with a misbehaving pet, it will administer one quick spritz to your face as soon as you open up your ex's account on your computer, cell phone, iPod Touch, or burner phone. We know you have one. To remind you that there's a reason you broke up and you must move on. And if you're really stuck on your ex, choose a custom fragrance for your spray like Old Egg Salad or Bus Station. Use code BACKSLIDE for 20% off your purchase of the Destalker. That's the Destalker. Stay away or get a spray. Welcome back to Typecast. I'm joined today by Isabel Fetishta, Senator Stevens, and Brandon Zhang, the playwrights of our spring rep season. All right, as I just mentioned, we are presenting your plays in rep, meaning that the plays have a shared space, shared scenic and lighting designers, and an overlapping schedule. I'm interested in what kind of creative impact has using these shared resources had on your plays, or has it? Is there any impact from that?
I mean, just thinking about the people that are working on both of our shows, Cleo, Grant, Darius, Courtney, they're killing it. And I think reading both of our plays, as Brandon mentioned earlier, that have so many like similarities while diverging in, you know, maybe tone or like medium, you know, genre, stuff like that. Just the creativity they've all brought into the space while trying to be like, okay, like what's the light plot going to look like for two shows in rep that need different things? What are the set pieces going to contain? I feel like every conversation we had in pre-pro was informed by the other person's play as well, in a way that like elevated, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's something they've done with the floor that I don't know if we would have gotten there if we didn't, like if Brandon's play hadn't required it, you know what I mean? And it elevates everything and vice versa. I actually don't know if they came up with it for my play or your play, but it works really well in both. So
yeah, I agree. I feel like, again, love all the designers. They're so imaginative. They're so creative. They're so competent. I really just, especially going through as something as stressful as the tech process, I'm just very grateful for their ideas and for their presence. Yeah, I absolutely believe that our works, because we are also kind of really involved in each other's processes. Like, we came into each other's first reads. We would like sometimes hop into rehearsal to say hi because we'd be rehearsing in the same space. We hear each other through the walls. I think there's something beautiful about that, like artistic blending and meshing. And I also think that because we're in rep, because we have to do a changeover in what, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, like really quickly, it really pushed our plays to be, how does Megan put it?
Technically simple. Text forward, technically simple.
Text forward, technically simple, which really, you know, is the heart of the work that gets produced at Boston Playwrights Theatre, right? Like, we're really trying to center our voices as the playwrights. And I think that actually helped me a lot because I wanted to craft a play that was, again, driven by the text, in which we can hear the story through the text, through the dialogue, through the actions. And I think that ultimately created more beautiful and better works for the both of us.
Yeah.
I want to dig into this a little bit. You mentioned that you were at each other's first reads and you've been really involved with each other throughout this overlapping process. So how have you been using each other as creative resources during this rehearsal and tech period?
So much.
Yeah, how?
Like, I'll have Isabel come in during a run and afterwards be like, Isabel, give me all the notes. Tell me how to fix this play. I don't know. I think emotionally, probably. I mean, we're going through, we're still in school. We still have classes. Yeah. I'm teaching. Like, we have a lot of stuff that we normally do. And now we're in this production process, which is so great. It's so energizing. I love it. But at the same time, it's also a very emotional process, I think, especially for playwrights, especially when it's a thesis. So it feels like this is supposed to be a culmination of sort of everything, you know what I mean? So I feel like my greatest gift from Isabel is just having another person there to understand exactly what I'm going through as the rehearsal process went on, and to hear my anxieties and just, you know, be a really good friend and emotional support.
Yeah, and building off of that too, like our cohort mates, Maggie and Tina, went through this last semester together. So you better believe we've sat down at dinner being like, this is where we're at, or I'll text Maggie in tech and Maggie's like, good, you're on schedule, you know, if you're feeling this way or if you're having that thought. Yeah, I think we're really fortunate, our whole cohort, just to get along so well. We all genuinely, we're a family. We call ourselves the sisters. And I don't know, like Nathan has just cultivated an environment where we are that family. You know what I mean? So like Brandon said, the emotional support, the friendship, I think is at the core of like, you can do anything, even if it feels hard.
All right. Well, you just name dropped Nathan Allen Davis.
I did.
the director of the MFA program here at BU and BPT. And you mentioned that you are graduating soon. So you have, over the last 3 years, been learning from some amazing teachers and mentors like Nathan, like Melinda Lopez,
Ronan,
yes. Han Sol-Jung. Let's boil it down. What is some piece of advice that you have gleaned from one or more of these folks that you want to share with aspiring writers out there?
Something funny one of them once said to me was like, they held my shoulder in class after I had pitched them an idea. And they said, you know, Isabel, I just like, I want you to be happy. And I was like, yeah, you know, we try. We try. And I guess like the advice I'm taking from that is like, in plays, you know, how can you be your authentic self while also maybe fabricating or building hope that you might not feel is possible in the real world, but you want to share with an audience and challenge them to create so that it is real, you know?
I think I learned two huge things for me. And the first one is a little bit related to what you just said. Don't be afraid of being yourself in your work. I think sometimes because we're reading so much, and as any aspiring playwright should read a lot of plays, sometimes we get stuck into this cycle of like, oh, we want to emulate this amazing playwright. We want to emulate this style. This is, you know, what contemporary playwriting looks like. But at the same time, what you bring to the table is deeply unique, and you should not try to conform yourself to that. I think in this program, I learned how to be funny. I learned how to write comedy that feels true to me. And part of that was just letting go of this self-imposed expectation that my play had to look or sound in a certain way, that it can be deeply inspired by my worldview and the way that I talk and the way that I love and live. And the second thing I think is just to remember the basics. I think, again, in the MFA program, you're always being challenged with new ideas and new forms and new structures and whatnot. That sometimes you can get really stuck in this loop of like, I want to do a million things with this play. But one of the greatest things that Hansel said to me actually was, what does your character want? Right. This was in response to a play where I was, again, juggling with so many ideas. I was like, Hansel, I've never seen a play that has done this before. I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to create this thing. And then she was just like, but what does your character want? I was like, shoot, I can't answer that question. You know what I mean? Like, so always remembering the basics, like character motivations, character arcs. What does your plot structure look like? How do you, you know, hook an audience? All of those things are so deeply important. And as long as you get the basics down, your play is just gonna sing.
I have one other thing too. Just like listening to you speak, something Hansel and Nathan said to us the other day was like, you guys are genuinely friends. Remember to uplift one another.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in an industry that can be so cutthroat or competitive. I don't think any of us ever had a thought that like, that would be what we would become, you know what I mean? But it was just a really good reminder to celebrate what we do have. And, you know, general life advice is be happy for other people.
Yeah.
And you'll find happiness, you know? So.
We've mentioned that you are both third year candidates and they're going to be graduating pretty soon. So I'm interested, as young playwrights, what is next on your theater journey? I don't want to stress you out. What is next for both of you?
Well, we're hoping to move to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Is the plan right now. Everything is up in the air. Darren, you are stressing me out with this question. I just want to name that right now. But look, I think as a playwright, I want to be flexible. I want to go where the opportunity takes me. And I want to... My journey is always to, I think at my age, because I am, like you said, so incredibly youthful. I want to live life, I think. You know,
yeah.
I didn't take a break from undergrad before coming here. I've been in school for,
yeah,
I don't know, something like 2 decades almost now. I think what I am really craving for, no matter where I go, is to really live life, to talk to people, to meet people, to experience new things, to struggle, to fall in love, to experience life as it should be. And I'm going to miss it because I think the MFA program has really created this very nice safety net,
mm-hmm,
and community that's really just built in, right, with the BPT community. But I think, you know, it's time for the bird to fly out the nest or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I also started the MFA like right after graduating college. There was no time between. So I think the two of us have kind of pushed off that like, oh my God, I'm out of school. What do I do? By 3 years, we pushed it off, which is pretty good. But now, you know, that's kind of where we're at. I have a job in Manhattan, so I will be picking up there and doing work that I love and I'm grateful to do.
What is that job?
I'm the Associate Artistic Director of New York Stage and Film, which is like a theater and film company dedicated to, you know, helping writers develop their pieces and find their voices and just explore and take big risks.
Perfect.
Yeah. So look for us in New York. We'll be there.
We definitely will. All right, now time for everyone's favorite part of Typecast. The duel to the death.
Oh my God.
Metaphorically, okay. Metaphorically, we're all friends here. All right, so as you have been talking about throughout this episode, you are part of a very close cohort here at BU for 3 years. You've gotten to know each other. You've gotten to know each other's plays and your writing style. So we're going to put that to the test.
Oh my God.
I'm going to read you lines from your play, some of which are real, some of which are fabricated.
No.
Oh my God.
No.
And you have to identify the real and the from the fake in the other person's play.
I kind of love that.
That is
crazy. I'm ready. I'm ready.
It's like a BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
So I'm going to read you a line and you have to tell me if it's real or fake. We're going to start with you, Isabel.
Okay.
This is a line. Or is it from The Recursion of a Moth? Here we go. Yeah, and you have to not give it away.
Poker face,
right? Here we go.
Okay.
Questioning rules doesn't give me a pension plan.
It feels very close, but I think it's fake.
And it is? Real!
Oh my God!
Oh,
that's right.
Oh, off to a slow start.
Off to a terrible start.
Off to a terrible start.
I try. I give you too much credit.
It is a new line, though.
Yeah.
Is a new line.
See, okay, that's not fair.
Yeah, no, these are up to the moment. Well, maybe not quite.
So we keep each other on our toes. We don't. We don't know.
Yeah. All right. So here's a line, Brandon, from Victory.
Got this.
Here it is. And when I look up at the sky to see if maybe clouds were covering the stars, I realized there were no clouds. There's just no stars.
Fake.
That was fully real.
No!
You saw that play like two days ago.
It's Darren Reddit.
Oh,
it's
deep. Yeah.
Darren Reddit, you just played.
All right, so that's both 0-for-1.
I was so confident.
You were right.
Yeah, you
were. Finished reading it, actually. That was incredible. Okay, good. Here we go. Number two for you, Isabel. The Bureau's shitty insurance doesn't cover my moon garden. It got completely destroyed in the kaboom of 1500.
No, that's fake.
Fake!
You wrote that? That is so funny.
Fake! Yes, you nailed it that time. All right. That's
I
a
like
point.
That line, though.
That's
yeah,
a point.
Put it in. Now it's real.
Yeah.
That's a line, you know, in the style of Brandon, of course, but not quite there. All right, here you go, Brandon. Can you keep up? Here is the line. I am the sun. Javed, now you must remind the sun how to shine.
Fake.
Correct!
Yes!
But it's actually from two versions ago when... No, I'm just kidding.
Montana never becomes the sun.
She did a couple versions ago.
Oh, yeah. But in the
current,
version
I
just saw.
No.
Yeah. All right, neck and neck. There's one question left. We'll see who's going to come out on top here.
Wait, we're tied.
It's tied.
Okay.
I want to win.
It is tied. This one's for you, Isabel. Last one. Is this a line from The Recursion of a Moth? Quantum theory isn't definite. It doesn't prove anything. It's just that, a theory.
False.
Correct!
Wow.
Right, you were confident on that one.
I love that play.
Super confident.
Yeah.
All right, well, that was just clearly bad writing, and you were like, that's not Brandon, so...
I was like, I don't remember quantum theory. I don't remember a year from the last one, 1500. No,
Clues.
No.
Look at the brain is kicking there. All right, well, can Brandon keep up?
Yes.
Here it is. Here it is, last one.
If I get this, I win, because it's worth 1,000 points.
That's not true. We tie.
Stakes are high, I guess. All right, here we go. Dear clouds, maybe when you give to us your rain, you don't disappear. You aren't dying. You simply transform.
That's a real line.
It is a real line.
Girl, you scared me. She was shaking her head for the listeners who couldn't see her. That was one of my favorite lines.
Oh, why is that one of your favorite lines?
Because the cloud scene is so beautiful and so thematic to what your play is talking about. You know what I mean? It's this beautiful. Not to spoil it, but it's about how like the water cycle is deeply transformative, but also it's like a metaphor for reincarnation. You always come back. The clouds don't disappear after it rains, you know. It turns into something else, and it comes back eventually as a cloud. Like, it's so beautiful. It's exactly what your play is about.
Thanks.
We're tied.
We're tied.
Yay! All right, so it's a joint victory. Joint victory. Both playwrights win with 2 correct answers, 1 incorrect answer. Well done. Really great. Nobody gets the prize I have, I guess. I'll have to keep that for myself. But the prize for our audience is to come see one or both of these shows. Isabel, why should people come see The Recursion of a Moth?
Ooh, I like this question. Because Brandon is able to encapsulate so much emotion in such a contained way that you can feel it vibrating just by being in the room. It's very smart, quick, and just like, I don't know, pulsing with life. Almost like a moth in a jar.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Interesting. All right. Cool metaphor. All right. Same question for you, Brandon. Why should people come see Victory?
People should come see Isabel's play because I saw it on opening night and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. It just stayed on my mind. It is so full of joy. There is so much beauty and levity and humanity in these characters that's what you get lost in the story, right? You know these people. You want to be there for those people. And what is so beautiful too is Isabel has such a talent for dreamlike poetic language that really transcends sort of the she just knows how to use language so well, and it is so incredibly beautiful. And honestly, some of the best work that I've seen from her, and it is truly, truly breathtaking to see it produced and realized. It is really good.
So another good reason is that it is really good. All right, thank you both. The Fig Tree and The Phoenix and The Desire to be Reborn is open, and The Recursion of a Moth opens on February 27. Both plays run only through March 9th, so go to bostonplaywrights.org, our newly redesigned website, to get your tickets now. And super cool deal, if you go see... buy a ticket to one play, you can go see the other play for just $10. So why not see them both? Best deal in town. Isabel and Brandon, thank you so much for being on Typecast.
Thank you, Darren. This was so fun.
Today's episode was researched and written by our student producer, Lauren Grill, and edited by me. Lauren also devised this episode's parody commercial. The theme music is Off to Osaka, and the final credits music that you're listening to right now is Malt Shop Bop, both by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his incredibly wide-ranging music at incompetech.com, that's incompetech.com. For more information about Boston Playwrights Theater, including our season of new plays, please visit our website, bostonplaywrights.org. See you next time.